Welcome to Focal Point. This is Dr. Jerry Newcomb, and our guest right now is Matt Staver, who's the founder and director of Liberty Counsel. And we're going to talk about having a Christian worldview. We're also going to talk about thinking about the government in terms of Christianity, so Christianity and government, and also what can we do as people, as ministers, as lay people, to try and turn things around here in America. Matt, welcome to the program.
Thank you. My pleasure to be with you.
Sure. And just a brief idea here. What is Liberty Counsel for those not familiar with it?
Well, Liberty Counsel is an international religious liberties, education, and legal defense organization. We advance religious freedom, the sanctity of human life, and the family through litigation, education, and public policy. We've been in existence since 1989, and the best way to think of Liberty Counsel is we're the opposite of the ACLU. We litigate in court, but we also have a lot of educational outreaches and public policy outreaches as well.
Well, you know, when you say that about the educational outreaches, for example, there are situations where principals may be thinking, hey, this is what the law says, therefore you can't, you know, mention God, you know, unless it's a curse word or something here at school. And in most cases, you just fire off a letter to that principal, you're wrong. The First Amendment doesn't expire the minute the student walks over the threshold of the school, that kind of thing. And that solves 99% of the cases, something like that?
It does. It solves most of the cases. We'll send off a letter. We'll make a phone call. We'll be in person if we need to in certain situations. We have pamphlets and brochures and booklets and books that we can provide as well. And we have a website that has a lot of information. So through a lot of different sources, we provide education, and most of the time that resolves the situation. What you have with, say, for example, school administrators, sometimes they just think they're supposed to censor anything that is religion or particularly Christianity, mm-hmm. when in fact they're wrong. And when they're educated about what the law is and the fact that we can stand behind them, they oftentimes change their mind and do the right thing.
Mm, good. In other words, the law is really on our side for the most part. It's almost as if there's more self-censorship within the church than there is censorship of the church by, let's say, the government or the world out there in general.
Well, there certainly is, particularly within the church. There's self-censorship everywhere, but there's particular censorship within the church. The pastors, for example, think that if they speak out on political or social or cultural issues, somehow they'll lose their tax-exempt status. Liberty Counsel has a Pastors and Patriots Initiative, and part of that we have DVDs and other educational information that educate about what pastors and churches can do. Not one church has ever lost its tax-exempt status for engaging in political activity or political issues. In fact, after Pastor John Hagee watched the video that I did on this very topic, he called me and he said, I feel like an inmate just let out of prison.
Wow.
Because everyone tells me what I can't do, but for the first time I've learned what I can do.
Well, that's a great, great testimonial. Now, I know that one of the things you wanted to discuss was having a Christian worldview. So what is a worldview and why does it matter? Why is this an important topic?
Well, a worldview is how you actually view the world. And in fact, someone illustrated this very easily one time, very memorable, where they put up on a screen a paragraph, and it was written in different colored sentences. And when you put on a particular color of glasses, like orange glasses, you could only read part of the paragraph and not the rest. A worldview sometimes opens up your ideas to things around you. Also, it closes your ideas to things around you. Everyone has a worldview. No one is apart from a worldview. Some people have smatterings of different worldviews. They make decisions. They don't know why. But we want to make sure that people have a solid Christian worldview, one that is based upon reality from which they can ultimately make decisions. Because if they don't have a solid Christian worldview, they'll simply be persuaded by a lot of different kinds of individuals, maybe because their rhetoric is better, they're a better speaker, but not because the ideas are better. So a Christian worldview is very important. And essentially the foundation components of a Christian worldview are creation, fall, and redemption. Those things really flow through how we actually see the world. For example, if there is a creator, there's a God. And consequently, the difference between two primary worldviews is, and there's really only two major worldviews, there's a lot of iterations of each one, but one is theistic and the other is atheistic. Either there is a God or there's not a God. That's a big division between different worldviews. Mm-hmm. America was built upon the idea that there is a God who is a creator. It's reflected in our Declaration of Independence. Our rights come from him, and government's duty is subservient to the people and must protect those God-given rights. On the other hand, France's worldview was based upon the fact that there is no God, so therefore where do rights come from? They come from the government, and consequently the government can change those rights at whim, and the government is the all-powerful source. Completely different policies and laws under which we live, but they ultimately stemmed from the foundation of two completely different worldviews.
Yeah, well, in fact, since you mentioned France, really you're talking about the France of the French Revolution. If you look at the American Revolution, if we could call it that, I think it's better to call it the American War for Independence. But, okay, you compare American Revolution versus the French Revolution. The difference between the two is extremely important. It's this God factor. The American Revolution was all about God. The French Revolution was all about anti-God. And the blood flowed because of that in France.
No question about it. I mean, those were two complete examples of conflicting worldviews that began in history at the same time. France was based upon the idea that there is no God. In America, there is a God. It makes fundamentally an important difference as to where our rights and liberties and how law and policy and our government ultimately function under those two worldviews. And in America, we declared there's a God who's a creator, and he has infused his creation, you and I, with certain unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and government's role is to protect those rights. But in France, man was the end of all things. There was no God, and so consequently, where do our rights come from? They come from man himself.
Right.
And consequently, since there is no God, there's no creator, it's evolutionary in its model, and therefore there's no fundamental transcendent rights. They can be changed, and who changes them? Man again. So if you disagree with what's in power, what the rules are from the governing body, what happens? Well, what happened in France is they cut your head off. And so the symbol of the French Revolution was not liberty like it is in the American Revolution.
Right.
It was, in fact, the guillotine.
Yeah. Very interesting. All right, now let me ask you this. I think there's some myths that are very common, very popular, but I think it's important to kind of set aside some of these myths one at a time that, in a sense, keep many Christians, professing Christians, well-meaning Christians, from having a biblical worldview. Okay, so let's look at the issue of the separation of church and state. Now, the idea of the separation of the institution of the church from the institution of the state, I think, is biblical, and it was in the American experience, certainly with the founding fathers, but not at all what they're talking about today. I'd like you to wax eloquent on this, the separation of church and state.
Yeah, there is certainly some truth in the idea, and no question about separating the institutions, because if you go back even to the nation of Israel, there was a division between the king and the priest. They didn't do the same functions. In fact, they were specifically warned not to have the king,
right,
which would be the one side, and the priest do the same functions. They were separate functions.
That was God's
through history,
design.
Yes, and through history we've seen the problems where the institutions of the state and the institutions of the church come together.
Yes.
And we've seen this collide with religious liberty. What we ultimately, however, do not mean by church and state separation is that church or the influences of Judeo-Christian principles and certainly people should not be removed from the government. In fact, our ideas, our Judeo-Christian ideas, should be the very foundation of the government. George Washington said that our country is founded upon the twin principles of religion and morality, and anyone who labors to undermine them is not a patriot, because they are unpatriotic, they are anti-American. Why? Because the republic on which we have ultimately staked our constitutional form of government is based upon the fact that the people will be a moral people, self-restrained. Well, where does that come from? It comes from religion. What kind of religion are they talking about? Judeo-Christian religion. So Judeo-Christian religion was necessary for government. In fact, even John Adams, our first vice president and second president, says our Constitution was made only for a religious and a moral people. It is wholly inadequate for the government of any other. It presupposes that the people are operating within a Judeo-Christian framework, and consequently our governmental principles and laws are based upon that Judeo-Christian framework.
Okay, now, what about the common myth, or at least notion, that the church should stay away from all politics? And this gets sticky because, for example, the late D. James Kennedy once said, look, abortion has always been something that the church has been concerned about from the beginning of the church 2,000 years ago. We've always been against abortion. Now, all of a sudden, we're being political because we're opposed to abortion still? So, what about this idea? Should the church stay away from all politics?
Well, I don't think the church should stay away from politics at all. In fact, our understanding is that God is the creator of all things, and so consequently, there are no boxes in which God does not have something to say about, or the scriptures don't have anything to say about. In fact, we oftentimes label things as political, and therefore we look at them as dirty, and consequently something the church shouldn't get involved with. Abortion is an example of that. Abortion is not a political issue. Just because politicians debate abortion, just because they debate whether there should be a law or not a law, does not make it political. It's still a biblical and moral issue. It is the very essence of our liberties. If we don't protect life at the most vulnerable part of that spectrum, in the womb being the first home of every one of us, then all of our liberties are in jeopardy. And in fact, Dr. Jerry Falwell, in 1965, he preached a sermon called Ministers and Marches, in which he said ministers should not be marching. Their job was to be behind the pulpit preaching the gospel. Well, that changed in 1973, the day after Roe versus Wade, when he read about it in the local newspaper. And he began to realize that this is not a political issue, this is a biblical issue, and consequently, as a pastor, he had no choice but to get involved.
Wow.
Up to the very day that he died, he wouldn't consider himself political. He considered himself to be a pastor. People look at him and thought, well, maybe he's very political, maybe he's too political. He always felt he was simply following his call as a pastor. And so when he spoke out on abortion, when he spoke out on human sexuality, marriage, whatever else, he was doing it because of his calling to be a pastor, to speak biblical truth.
Okay, what about this notion that's very popular today? Well, it's all prophesied to get worse, so why be involved in trying to save the country, because prophecy has foretold it and we're just fighting against the designs of God?
Well, there's two things I would say to that, irrespective of your eschatology, and if, in fact, your eschatology is that it's all going to get worse, the question is, when is it going to get worse?
Right.
And are we at that point of no return? And a lot of people through history have always thought it's going to happen in their lifetime.
Yeah, it's
the world
true.
Is going to come to an end.
It's true.
And, you know, and I live every day like that. But I don't know whether it's going to come to an end in my lifetime or whether it'll be multiple generations later.
Right.
But everyone has operated under that particular idea. And in fact, we ought to always be ready to go meet our Lord. But on the other hand, there are times when things have gone bad and the church has persisted under duress and even persecution, and God has turned things around. And so there's these cycles of things getting really bad, and then people begin to realize their depravity and their need, and they turn back. And so, therefore, you have a revival that takes place. And we've had great awakenings throughout our history, in recent history, in fact, in terms of world history is concerned. So that's number one. And number two, even if we are at the very last throes of existence on this earth, God has still called us to occupy and to transform the culture and the world around us as he has transformed us. So even if I'm getting ready to run into a wall tomorrow, I'm going to run as fast as I can today.
Mm. Okay, well, that sounds like a terrible analogy. As a runner, I don't like that idea. but anyway, let's go to another common conception. You can't legislate morality.
Well, all law is legislating morality. In fact, every single law that you have in existence is a legislation of morality. Hmm. A speed limit is a law based upon morality. It's based upon the fact that you want to preserve lives, and consequently you have to have a certain speed for a certain zone. An exit sign at a building or any place of business is a law based upon morality, again, for public health and safety. The size of a door is legislating morality to make it accommodable for individuals who are going in and out, particularly those who are in wheelchairs or other kind of devices that are helping their mobility. So every single law is a legislation of morality. The only question is not whether law will legislate morality. All law is essentially morality in print. The question is, what morality is it legislating? And if you back away from this and say, well, we can't legislate the sanctity of human life, well, then how can we legislate about murder? Murder is a sanctity of human life, and we're legislating about that. We say you can't murder. It is a crime to commit murder. Consequently, that's based upon morality. Should we just not have any laws at all? If we didn't legislate on morality, we wouldn't have any laws, and we would have chaos. We'd have no liberty whatsoever. The real question is, what morality is the law going to be based upon? If we withdraw, then obviously the morality on which these laws will be based would be immorality, and they would be very oppressive.
Do you think, speaking about Christian worldview, would you say, Matt, and I know this is just a guesstimate on your part, but as you survey the landscape of American Christians today, including a lot of well-meaning, devout believers in our Lord Jesus Christ, would you say that many have, honestly, have a thoroughly biblical worldview? They think with the mind of Christ today?
No, I would say that it would probably be the opposite. And I think George Barna, in his research and statistics, have indicated the same thing. I would say there's two different ways of answering that question. If you're talking about people who believe in God, you're going to have the vast majority, very high percentages of people who say they believe in God. But if you really start to drill down in terms of how that affects their daily thinking, whether they think biblically, whether they think with a Christian or Judeo-Christian worldview, then it becomes even more fractured and problematic. People that believe in God, people that attend church regularly, oftentimes they don't think with a biblical worldview. And consequently, you see passages in the New Testament that say, don't be pushed around by every wind of doctrine.
Mm.
Why are people pushed around by every wind of doctrine? Why do they, for example, change their mind on same-sex marriage? That is a fundamental, foundational question. You do not change your mind on that based upon popularity polls, constitutional amendments, whether the courts or the legislature say one thing, whether you have a friend or family who's homosexual. That does not change the very creative nature of God, and it goes back to this whole creation, fall, redemption worldview. God is the author. God is the creator, and God designed us in certain ways that are part of a natural order. You may not like it. You may try to disagree with, for example, the laws of gravity. You might want to try to jump off of a building. You'd rather fly than fall. But the fact is, you can't change it, no matter whether you put it up to popular vote or not. And there are certain fundamental, non-negotiables, transcendent principles that also flow not only in the laws of physics, but also certainly in the laws of morality.
Boy, you know, that is so true. And to be frank with you, if the truth were allowed to be told about, for example, how unhygienic and dangerous the homosexual lifestyle is, just on a physical health perspective and mental health and other things, if the truth were allowed to be told, people would realize that, hey, the people who are out there speaking against the homosexual lifestyle are not people who are filled with hate, but rather they're people filled with warning. Just like people are out there saying, hey, don't smoke those cigarettes. Those things are bad for you. They're going to kill you. And by the way, I've got to just say this. We're talking right now with Matt Staver of Liberty Council, and we're talking at this moment about having a Christian worldview and thinking these things through with the mind of Christ. But how about a comment about that, Matt?
Well, you know, you're right. And here's what I tell students and others that I talk about with regards to the foundation of law. Law is all pervasive. It is an emanation of God. It is part of His character in terms of the laws that govern us here. It's part of the natural order in terms of the laws of physics and the laws of morality. Clearly, we can't break the laws of physics, but there's laws of morality that we can't break either. We may not see the immediate consequences, but we will see the consequences. And so, for example, when you look at law in its proper foundation, if it's put in its proper foundation, the spokes of law, the things that we actually are affected by, the laws, the ordinance, the cases, it's designed, if it's founded in the proper foundation, to bring life over death, liberty over tyranny, and bring order out of chaos. If you destroy the foundation, instead of protecting life, it brings death. Instead of giving liberty, it brings tyranny. Instead of order, it deconstructs and brings chaos. God's laws are designed to give us life and liberty. And so when the natural created order, as well as the revealed word of God, speaks about human sexuality, male and female, and sexual activity outside of marriage. It is designed to give us the optimum that God created us for. If we try to push the limits and color outside the lines, we may think that we're experiencing liberty, but ultimately we experience the very bondage that God is trying to protect us from. And so when you look at, say, same-sex marriage or homosexuality and same-sex issues, the people may try to redefine that, but the fact is you can't redefine the consequences of violating that. And you can go to the Center for Disease Control as an example. It's not a right-wing organization. It's a government research entity. Mm-hmm. And just look at the consequences of same-sex behavior, particularly among males. And it is significant in every mental area, in every physical area. It is significant in terms of the manifest increased consequences that are life and death consequences of engaging in same-sex activity. Somebody may say, well, for the mental, that may just be because people stigmatize homosexuals. No. If you look at studies from the Netherlands that's much more accepting of that lifestyle, it's the same thing. So it is the consequence of the behavior, not the perception of people around those who are behaving that way.
Now, when we talk about this Christian worldview, you mentioned creation is kind of like the first foundation of understanding a Christian worldview. Well, where does that put evolution?
Well, it's a diametric opposite to that. First of all, the two main distinguishing factors of worldviews is there is a God, there is not a God. And you can start to look at the different consequences. We've already talked about that with regards to the French Revolution and the American Revolution. But then you look at whether there's a creator or not. And if there's evolution versus creation, well, what does creation tell us that evolution doesn't? Tells us that there's order in the universe. It tells us, for example, if we're a scientist, we can discover. In fact, many of the great scientists through history have commented about the fact that they were able to discover hard things in the reality of our universe because they knew that there was order to the creation because of the creator.
Yes.
It's kind of like moving yourself through a maze. If you think it's just haphazard evolutionary and you constantly bump into a dead end, you'll eventually give up because you just don't know. You can't assure yourself that there's order to this mess. But if there's order to the universe, and there's order to the universe if there's a creator God, then you know that you can continue to push, you can continue to expend your energies, and you'll eventually find what that order ultimately is. So it is very fundamental to who we are. The fact that there is a creator means that there's creative things that God put into existence, just like a painter. You can tell the ideas of a painter by looking at the strokes of the brush or how they put light or how they distort faces. God created the natural world in which we live in. And as Romans talks about in Romans chapter 1, even without the law, you have a convicting conscience and part of the natural created order because you know inherently what's right and wrong by virtue of the created order and the conscience that God put into us.
All right. Now, you've talked about a Christian worldview. You've also mentioned, you know, how the Declaration of Independence says that our rights come from God and what a difference that makes when it comes to Christianity and government. How about a comment related to government along the lines of civil magistrates? What did the biblical teaching on, you know, magistrates, what bearing does that have on us as modern Americans as far as government?
Well, a civil magistrate is kind of like a minister of justice. You know, we have ministers that preach behind the pulpit, but a civil magistrate is a minister of justice. They are a servant of the people, and they are a magistrate under the authority of God to serve the people. So it puts the whole idea of civil magistrates in a completely different perspective. They are under the law. They are not above the law. And their duty is to administer this higher law. And in fact, you know, going back to this worldview again, there is in this inherent structure of Christian worldview that has been passed down to us for 2,000 years, that there is a higher law, and all earthly law must conform to that law. Mm-hmm. Earthly law that does not conform, that conflicts, is no law at all. Best example of this is there's the law of gravity. You can have a law that says you can jump off the building, but you're not going to be having consequences, you can fly. Well, that's ridiculous. We would say that's no law of all. Well, there's other laws that may not be as obvious, but if they conflict with the natural law of God,
yes,
they're no law at all. Magistrates, the ministers of justice, who are designed to administer justice to the people, are operating under God's higher law. And their authority is only when they operate under that higher law to administer justice to the people.
Well, we can think of an example. Just last month, we celebrated the 50th anniversary of Dr. King's speech, I Have a Dream. And, you know, the idea of, for example, Jim Crow laws, those laws were degrading to one set of human beings. And, of course, God's word says, from one man God made all peoples of the earth, which implicit in that statement is a repudiation of all forms of racism. And so those were laws that violated God's law. And an extreme example of the Nazis, where the Nazis killed people thinking they were doing humanity a favor because they were trying to speed up evolution. Hey, let's kill the Jews. They're not Aryans. Let's kill the Gypsies. They're not Aryans, etc.
And in fact, the Martin Luther King Jr.'s letter from the Birmingham jail touched on that very issue. People asked him, Martin, why are you obeying some laws and disobeying others? And he says, that's simple. That there are some laws that are just, you need to obey them. But there's other laws that are unjust, you have a duty to disobey them. What are unjust laws? Those are laws that conflict with the laws of God. They are no law at all. And thus, he found himself sitting in jail because he was disobeying an unjust law that conflicted with the law of God. And, you know, you can look at history with laws that have conflicted. For example, let's look at a Supreme Court case, Dred Scott. Taney, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, said, Dred Scott, you don't have the rights of a citizen because of the color of your skin.
Mm.
In fact, he said that blacks are inferior human beings. Well, how dare he say something like that? That's racist. It didn't reflect the rule of law then any more than it reflects the rule of law now. It was contrary to the natural law. It was contrary to revealed law as well.
All right, now, we're basically almost out of time. Apart from voting, and granted, voting and getting Christians out there to vote and then vote in a Christian way and be informed and so forth, apart from that and apart from prayer, which, of course, is very important, too, for our country and renewal, revival, etc., what else can we do as Christians?
Well, one of the things that we are doing is we're establishing Salt and Light ministries in different churches so that the pastor and also the people in the church can be educated on worldview and what you can do on a regular basis, locally, statewide, and nationally. But obviously you need to vote, you need to pray. Maybe you need to run for office, you need to support someone who is running for office. You need to be involved in the local school board, in your local city council. You need to support organizations that actually are making a difference. Write letters, get on email lists so that you can respond to different kinds of legislation. For example, in San Antonio and in other cities, they have these different kinds of controversies that come about with regards to sexual orientation ordinances or other kinds of issues. You need to get involved and be present at some of those meetings when they're necessary. There's a lot of ways, whether it's email, writing a letter, making a telephone call, volunteering, that you can be involved in. We have many opportunities that we can help get people involved so that their worldview can actually connect to real-world issues. The church and pastors need to wake up. This is a critical time in American and world history for the church to really be the church.
Mm, excellent. Thank you so much, Matt Staver, for being with us. Please go ahead and give us a website you want to plug that can allow our listeners to plug into what these things you've just described.
Yes, you can go to Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org, lc.org. You can also go to libertycounsel.com, libertycounsel.com. Those are two different websites. We have a lot of resources, and, of course, you can always call us toll-free, 800-671-1776. That's 800-671-1776 or lc.org.
Okay, Matt Staver, thanks so much for being with us. God bless you. We'll talk to you later, okay? Thank you now. All right. Bye-bye now. That was, again, Matt Staver of Liberty Counsel. This is Jerry Newcomb. We'll be back in a moment with more on Vocal Point.